And you used a word, vision, Dan, which I think is so powerful. You know, sometimes you have to leave your back, your own neighborhood, and you have to go somewhere else, and then you develop a vision for that. And so you come back and say, wait, I want to share that vision. I want to execute that vision. I want to live in that vision. So I think that that's a very powerful dimension. So I'm glad you used that word. It's what we all want to have, is a vision for a future that helps people. And so I'm really delighted to be in a community in Southern Chester County where there's a lot of folks that want to give of themselves to alleviate pain and suffering. And we do ours through home repairs. Yeah.
No, I'm just listening and thinking that there are a lot of us in Southern Chester County who have a lot to be grateful for. And so it's a good thing that so many people are willing to share, because we're pretty well off here.
Yeah, you know, it's the irony of Chester County, right? Reported the most wealthy county in the Commonwealth, right?
Yes.
And yet there are thousands of people who live for us, it's substandard and unsafe homes. And so the good news is that there are, like you said, there's well-off people and there's talented people, both who want to share their lives and to give back to the community. So that makes Southern Chester, or makes Chester County, and Southern Chester County in particular, a really great place to be.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of A Place in the Conversation. We're glad to have you join us today. Have a good friend, Nick Everhart is here with us, and we have our guest, Harold Naylor from Good Neighbors. So Nick, how was your Thanksgiving?
That was very nice. We had turkey, but we didn't have a turkey. So we bought a big turkey breast, and we had that and steaks. And so it was a little unusual, a little different.
A little different for you. Nice. Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool. Good. Good. Well, we traveled down to North Carolina and got to spend some time with my mother-in-law down there. And, you know, we did that, buy your Thanksgiving dinner from one of the local grocery stores. And that was amazing, actually, and just way more food than what we needed or anticipated. And but it was good to sit around a table with family from North Carolina that we don't get to see, but maybe a couple times a year. So that was a blessing. So like I said, we're making a place in the conversation today to talk with Harold Naylor from Good Neighbors. And Harold, why don't you take a moment and just introduce yourself, and then we'll talk a little bit about Good Neighbors.
Good. Well, thank you for having me today. This is a real pleasure and a treat and a great opportunity to talk about what God's doing at Good Neighbors Home Repair. I've been with Good Neighbors for the last 7 years, but Good Neighbors is a 32-year-old Christian ministry that began right here in Southern Chester County, specifically in Kennett Square, and then emerged out of that and grew out of that up until about 7 years ago. And 7 years ago, we expanded into New Castle County, Delaware. And 2 years ago, we expanded into Lancaster County. So we've been blessed to have lots of resources, and we've been able to grow. So I've been with the organization for, like I said, the last 7 years, and I'm thrilled and honored to be a part of an organization that's restoring hope through repairing homes.
Yeah. So Harold, what were you doing before you were working with Good Neighbors?
I had two jobs in the Christian schooling world.
Okay.
I was an advancement director for a classical Christian school in Newcastle, Delaware for 8 years. And prior to that, I had the same role for another classical school in Southeast Delaware County. So I was in Christian education for 15 years or 16 years. And then prior to that, I worked for DuPont in corporate new businesses. So
I didn't know that.
Yes. Yeah. So,
well, so did I.
Yeah. You throw a stone, you're going to hit somebody who worked for DuPont around here, right?
It's true.
The fun thing about having worked for DuPont is that, you know, we bring all the DuPonters, former DuPonters I know, have great backgrounds, great experience. And then there's a life after DuPont as well. And so everybody that I know landed really well. So they appreciate their DuPont experience, but then landed well. So I'm thankful for for DuPont for the 11 years that I was there. So,
yeah. You probably know this, but Jay was at DuPont.
I did know that. Yeah. And Bob Johnson, who you probably know.
I do. Yeah.
He was a PhD chemist.
Yes.
Turned accountant.
And his father was at DuPont.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. I knew. We grew up in Wilmington together. So.
Yeah.
Same church.
He's a wonderful, wonderful volunteer. Yeah. So, yeah.
Someday, Nick, we're going to have to do a podcast and just set up like 30 microphones and just get everybody, all past DuPonters, around a table and just start telling stories about DuPont.
We could do that.
Yeah. That'd be kind of cool. Well, so Harold, you know, you talked a little bit about good neighbors, and you talked about starting out in Kennett Square and then expanding a little bit. Talk about the early years of Good Neighbors, and how they got started.
Well, you know, Nick could probably talk about it as well as I could, but it started with a dream of one guy, Jay Malthainer, who was a member of Presbyterian Church of Kennett Square. He still does have a great heart of giving and love, and he's a very generous man. He had been to Appalachia to work probably several different weeks with the Appalachia Service Project, which did critical repairs for very, very low income folks in the West Virginia area. He came back and he said, you know, I think that there's work that needs to be done right here in our immediate vicinity. And so what happened was that they started, like a lot of low nonprofit entrepreneurs, they said, let's just see what's needed right in our own backyard. So they started to help some of the elderly folks in his church do some demolition, some minor repairs. And then that brought on some other volunteers, people from his own Bible study. And the next thing you know, people are giving them some money and say, hey, look, you need to be doing these free repairs for others. And so that's really how it began 32 years ago. It was long before it actually became its own 501c3, you know, registered nonprofit. So really it started with heart. Jay's heart was huge. He was skilled. He is skilled. He still volunteers. And it's been just wonderful to see the hundreds of folks that he inspired over the years to really give of themselves and give of themselves in a way that they can see the immediate impact, because there's nothing like, you know, you see a need, you go fix it, and it's instant gratification for the person who does the work, and it's instant relief for the recipient.
Yeah. You know, as you're sharing that story, and there's a lot of times I've had conversations with people inside of churches and inside community, and you talk about, you know, why are you taking people to Appalachia? Why are you taking people to another country to do work? Right. And there's need right here in our own backyard. And the reality is you take people to those places to get them out of their own backyard, right, so they can see the need, you know, in a different way, because they're not going to see it in their own backyard until they're confronted with that, the depth and the breadth of the need somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And then coming back, they have a different vision,
right,
of what's going on in their own backyard. And there are so many service organizations and all that kind of stuff that got birthed in somebody's own backyard,
yeah,
as a result of taking the time to go away and to be away and to serve people somewhere else. And that's just you know, listen to you share that. That's just another witness to the value of helping people get out of where you are, see something different in the world, and then coming back and saying, okay, what can I do here?
You used a word, vision, Dan, which I think is so powerful. You know, sometimes you have to leave your own neighborhood and you have to go somewhere else, and then you develop a vision for that. And so you come back and you say, wait, I want to share that vision. I want to execute that vision. I want to live in that vision. So I think that that's a very powerful dimension. So I'm glad you used that word. It's what we all want to have, is a vision for a future that helps people. And so I'm really delighted to be in a community in Southern Chester County where there's a lot of folks that want to give of themselves to alleviate pain and suffering, and we do ours through home repairs.
So. Yeah.
No, I was just listening and thinking that there are a lot of us in Southern Chester County who have a lot to be grateful for. And so it's a good thing that so many people are willing to share because we're pretty well off here.
Yeah, you know, it's the irony of Chester County, right? It's reported the most wealthy county in the Commonwealth, right?
Yes.
And yet there are thousands of people who live in our, for us, it's substandard and unsafe homes. And so the good news is that there are, like you said, there's well-off people and there's talented people, both who want to share their lives and to give back to the community. So that makes Southern Chester, or makes Chester County, and Southern Chester County in particular, a really great place to be.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah, I agree with that. So, you know, talk about some of the programs that, you know, that you do. I know that there's one particular season of the year where you do a lot with youth, with high school students, where they have opportunities to engage and to be a part of the giving back. And
high school students are a critical part of our mission. We, as I was saying before we actually started recording, that in any given year, we have between 300 and 400 volunteers, and probably a third of those volunteers are high school students. Now, we use high school students throughout the entire year. Most of them come on Saturdays. They come as a part of a youth group or some sort of church group. But during the summer we've had, and we've been doing this for now 18 years, we have a summer youth camp that's one week, but having up to 60 students from as many as 5 or 8 churches, and they will come together. And we've been doing that all the way through this past summer, where again, students will come and they'll be in a sleepover kind of encampment in a church. So they kind of bunk up at the church. We provide the meals and we've done the program. And then what we do is we have lots of chaperones from those churches, and the youth go out and over 5 days, they can, when they're well organized and got the right tools and well instructed, they put on roofs, they do windows, siding, they'll repair decks, and they learn skills that they've never had before, and they come back with an appreciation for what they have. They've encountered the Lord in lots of ways. They've bonded with their friends, and it's an exciting time. So we're going to continue that same program, but we're going to do it a little different way this coming summer, and I can talk about that, or we can get back to that if you'd like to do that.
Yeah, whatever you want to talk about.
So what we're doing this coming year is we're going to do it a little differently. Excuse me, is we're going to do what are called DIY camps, where a DIY camp is, as the name implies, we're going to have students from a church come in. Their own church will actually be their host.
Yeah.
So they're still going to do the sleepaway for 3 or 5 days. We're going to continue to provide the homeowners to work on their homes. We'll still do the instruction, but we're not going to be feeding them and housing them. So that keeps good neighbors kind of out of the business of being a retreat center, which we are not. We don't have our own facility, so we have had to borrow. But they'll still have the same experience. And so that's so we'll do one in June, one in July, one in August, and we may fit in another one. So we're really excited that the youth leaders are already signing up now, you know, long before the summer, and they want to get a place to do this because we have a good reputation.
Yeah.
But the youth, again, they learn how to work together. They can see the connection between, you know, giving and giving their, you know, we say time, talent, and treasure. Well, this time they've got time and they've got talent. Not so much treasure yet, but lots of time and talent.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. So how do you find the houses to work on? How do you find the people, you know, who you ultimately end up helping?
Well, after having done this for 32 years and in the same area, we're pretty well known in Southern Chester County. All of our trucks are six or seven trucks. They're all emblazoned with Good Neighbors. So we have kind of these rolling billboards. But the other thing is that churches refer to us, senior centers refer to us, any social agencies, hospitals, clinics, and then friends of people that we've served. So, you know, we start in a neighborhood and then somebody sees our trucks and our staff and they'll say, hey, you need to get to talk to Good Neighbors because, you know, they helped fix my house and they did it for free. And so, you know, good news travels fast.
Yeah.
So referrals come from all kinds of folks. The other way that we get referrals is somebody This happened to me last night. A friend of mine says, I've got a neighbor who is an elderly person. She would never call you herself, but can I call? And I said, yes, you can do. You can call. You can go online to goodneighborshomerepair.org, and you can actually refer a friend. You can give us their contact information, tell us what you know about their house, and we'll just follow up with them. So sometimes people need a friend to come alongside and to refer them to Good Neighbors. So we can do it by, you know, they can fill out applications online, they can send it back, and then the process starts. But how we find them is that, again, we've been doing this for so long that we've got a good reputation as a vibrant Christian ministry. Yeah.
So I've got a question, and I don't want to get down the weeds too much, but I mentioned to you earlier a man from our church who used to be involved with Good Neighbors, and now I recall what he did. He used to look at the financials of the people to determine if they actually had a financial need. Do you still do that?
We still do that, yeah. We want, our mission is to serve low-income homeowners. And so when we start the application process, it starts with a telephone call, of course, and then we have our senior project manager goes out and looks, does a physical evaluation and interviews with the homeowner. And then if we decide that that we think they meet the requirements and they certainly have needs, then the next step is the application. So then we do the financial vetting. And so that involves an application where we actually look at their income, we look at their savings. We also want to make sure that they're current on their mortgage if they don't own their house. We want to make sure they're current on their taxes because we don't want them to have their house taken from them after we put all this money and effort into it. Of all the calls that we get in a week, which it could be 30 calls a week, we approve and take on about a third. Okay. So at any point in time, our backlog of approved vetted projects for us is between 80 and 90. So we have about 4 months worth of work that is already queued up, ready to go at any point in time.
Good. Yeah, that's fantastic. So what else is, you were talking a little bit earlier about a new growth place for you guys.
Yeah, so we have two major kind of new initiatives. One is that, as I said a bit earlier, we expanded into southern Lancaster County. So if you're familiar with this area, it's in and around the Quarryville area and all the way down to the bottom of Lancaster County. That's an area that, counties have their wealthy areas, but this is an area of lots of low-income folks. And a lot of them live in manufactured mobile homes, and we repair those as well. So, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, a mobile home only has a life of 20 years or maybe 25 years. And so, you know, why would you go and spend money repairing those? And we say, look, this is their home. This is all they have. So we sometimes will shore up floors and we'll put in ramps and grab bars and railings and things like that. So we do all kinds of things for mobile homes as well as conventionally built homes. But Southern Lancaster County is a very poor area. And there are a lot of churches who have lots of willing folks. As I said, we're funded, but there was no organization doing critical home repairs like we are doing. So we came in. We only move into areas where there's a gap, and there's not somebody else already doing that. So we try not to overlap. So in Chester County, for example, we're in the southern third of Chester County. There's another very, very wonderful organization called Good Works, and they're headquartered in Coatesville. And the founder of Good Works and Jay Malthane, our founder, were very good friends, and they work collaboratively. And we have a little demarcation there right across Chad's Ford area. And so Good Neighbors is Chad's Ford and south along Route 1, and Good Works has from there north. And so so that's how we have a little demarcation there.
Yeah. I was thinking, of course, recently about the death of Rosalind Carter the commitment that she and Jimmy Carter made to Habitat for Humanity. And how would you compare the work that you're doing with what Habitat does?
Well, in the last 4 months, that work has actually come together in a very beautiful way. So Habitat of Chester County and Good Neighbors and Good Works, the organization I just mentioned, are now working together with Chester County government in what's called the Whole Home Repair Program. And so this is a very large program that will probably end up serving 300 families over the next 2.5 years. So we won a giant grant. The three of us came together and we put together a joint proposal between Habitat, Chester County, Good Works, Good Neighbors. And so it's a $2.5 million contract that we have. And then each of us has a share of that. So in this sense, now Good Neighbors and Habitat are actually doing similar things. We just work in, we split the houses and the homeowners between us. And so we will actually work, maybe work in the same area, but we'll do slightly different projects but they're going to take on some and we'll take some. Good Works will take some, and we're not going to overlap because we have one clearinghouse for all the applications, and then we will divvy them up as time goes on. So
I know Good Neighbors, Habitat, part of their work was building homes. Have you gotten into that also?
We have not. And this is something that we've stayed away because we think that Habitat does a great job of building new homes. So in West Grove, they're in the middle of I think it's an 80-unit development that they're doing. So we will not be in the business of building new homes. And Habitat in general was in the building business of doing new homes, but they've expanded into repairs as well. Because repairing homes is, from a public policy and just a housing policy point of view, is critically important. The CDC even talks about how important healthy, sustainable homes are for the health of Americans. So there's plenty of work to be done. And so I'm glad that Habitat has expanded into home repairs. And as a matter of fact, I was just invited today to their January board meeting to come and speak about Good Neighbors so that everybody kind of understands what we're all doing. So there's plenty of work to be done. Yeah. And so we're just going to try to make light work with many
hands.
That's
great, really.
I really like the collaboration around the grants. Mm-hmm. And that just is... You know, three organizations coming together, putting together one grant that's well written, that demonstrates collaboration, you know, throughout the whole county it's a beautiful thing. And so often we just struggle with that. So, man, just congratulations to you guys and your partners for doing that. I've been a part of places where I've tried to help. Groups say, hey, you know what? We all ought to write one grant instead of writing four competing grants. And no, we don't want to do that. And then all four grants failed. Right, and it's exactly. Like, well, I tell you why they failed, because you can't work together. You showed it. Yeah. And if you can't work together, they're not going to fund it.
And funding agencies want to see us work together.
Exactly.
Because they don't. Yes. We don't need duplication of anything. So we have a I and the executive director of each of the other two organizations, we make up a leadership team and we meet on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And we have one website, one phone number, and all the applications for the whole county of Chester County come into one place. Yeah. And then we have a person who does the evaluation and who helps divvy them out to the right organization to work on. So there's no competition. We're already funded. You know, we all know how much we have. And we're working within that framework. And then we meet together and then we cooperate, we share resources. It's already, I mean, we've only been in it for 2 months, but it's been just very, very successful and a lot of fun to work with your peers to do a greater good. So we're actually able to do more than we could have done individually.
That's absolutely beautiful.
It makes a lot more sense than competing with each other, which I have seen with not-for-profits.
Yeah. We're doing one other thing, if I could mention that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I mentioned to you Lancaster County, but the other thing that we're doing, and this started in Newcastle County, is we have a Healthy Homes Initiative. And we started with a grant that came from Blue Cross Highmark in Delaware, who said, we know that if you do critical home repairs, especially to eliminate slips, trips, and falls for elderly patients, that we can hopefully avoid them getting hospitalized or worse by falling in their homes. And so they gave us a grant that would cover somewhere between 40 and 50 homes. And we're putting in grab bars, railings, wheelchair ramps, or fixing steps. And then in bathrooms, we'll put comfort height toilets in. We'll do tub cutouts or convert tubs to roll in showers. And those are fairly nominal expenses, It's not like putting on a roof, which is more expensive. So, but we have a team of our Healthy Homes Initiative who actually goes out and does that work, again, very cost-effectively. And we're doing, it's a longitudinal study, so over about a year or two, we're actually going to track and see if the incidence of slips, trips, and falls and hospitalizations resulting from that actually go down, because we actually prevented a bunch of more serious accidents. So, as you know, when an elderly person falls, it can be the beginning of the end. Absolutely. And I speak to that with personal knowledge. My own father, when he was in his late 80s, fell, and he was hospitalized and then got bronchitis. I mean, then you get these hospital-acquired infections, and he eventually passed. So I have a personal interest in the Healthy Homes Initiative to allow seniors to age in place. That's the official title, but really it's saying, you know, get old in your own home. And so what we come in and do is we just try to make that home safer and more accessible for them. We'll even pull up carpet, and refinish floors. We look at thresholds to see anything that could be a tripping hazard. Or again, we put lots of grab bars and railings inside the house. And when they step out, you know, again, railings and looking at how the steps work, if they're still using steps. Or again, we install aluminum ramps probably one a week. So we're doing a lot with ramps.
Sort of a related question. You're talking about safety and health. What about the environment? Are you doing anything to make sure that the homes are more energy efficient?
We don't do a lot of weather, in the general term that's called weatherization, and we don't do a ton of insulation to reduce energy consumption. What we do is we install new HVAC systems that, by just because of the design, a new system is more efficient than old systems. We install water heaters, and again, the newer water heaters are more efficient than the older ones. When we repair a roof, we don't generally, unless it's a special situation, we don't generally re-insulate, and we don't put insulation under the floors or in the walls. Those are important to do, but there are other organizations that do weatherization kinds of projects, and they're energy-related. So we do the part that we can do, but we don't. And like, for example, when we replace windows, we replace windows with energy-efficient windows, but we don't routinely upgrade windows. I mean, we try to put in the same kind of windows, roughly, that they had before, because our job is not to upgrade a home. Our job is to allow people to stay in their homes, but not to upgrade them so that, you know, like the next set of relatives can turn around and sell it at a profit, because we have to be careful. You know, we're not using our money. We're using the money from some very, very generous people in the community who have donated their hard-earned money. So,
That all makes sense. That all makes sense. So, Harold, as you think about the work of Good Neighbors, what's one of the biggest challenges you guys face right now?
We have three challenges. One is that we always need more skilled volunteers, and maybe a skilled volunteer might become a staff person. So we have part-time project managers who are professional level kinds of folks, and we can always use more of those because our demand keeps going up. As I was saying earlier, before we actually started our recording, that when I came to Good Neighbors 7 years ago, we were doing 60 to 70 major home repairs a year. This year, we're going to complete 220, and there's still more demand. So next year, in our budget, is 250. So if you think about that, that's like one major repair per day of the year, for a work week. So we need more skilled people. The other thing we can always use more financial resources, because we do not charge the homeowners at all. No one pays anything for repair. I mean, even if they put a new roof on and siding and windows, and those repairs can cost us, just in material alone, $10,000 and more dollars. We never charge the homeowners for any of that. And I think that the third thing is that we can just use prayer. We're a Christian ministry, and we want to come alongside our homeowners with the hope of the gospel. So we share our faith with everyone. We do it by permission, so we don't jam it down anybody's throat. But we know that we're propelled by the love of Christ, and that's why we do what we do. And so we share that, and we would love for more churches to come alongside Good Neighbors, because what we do is we're not the church. So when we evangelize or when we talk to somebody and they say, I'm interested in going deeper with God or learning about God, then our job is to connect them with a local Bible-believing church. So our goal is to see more churches step up and say they'd like to be part of our outreach ministry, because we're sort of a, in this case, we're kind of a para-church ministry, and then we want to come alongside the local church to do the outreach that they want to do anyway.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Yeah, the outreach they want to do anyway, but might not have the skill set or the resources to be able to do. And but you could send two or three people.
Yep.
You know,
yeah,
to come and help.
And that's what we say is, you know, give us a member of your church that has some needs. Give us two or three volunteers. We'll supply the material. We'll supply the project manager, and you can go and do local ministry right inside your church. So we talk about it in terms of concentric circles. The closest in is your own members, and then it's family members of those members, or it's friends of those members, and then you get in the outreach business. So there's several churches that have really subscribed to that philosophy, and we're very excited about it.
Yeah, that's very cool. So if somebody, and when you talk about somebody with a skill set, talk about exactly like what that is, right? Because I imagine there's somebody who's listening who goes, man, I could really, this is kind of interesting. I might want to get involved.
Awesome question.
I'm definitely not a general contractor, right. But I take care of stuff around my house.
That's perfect.
What does somebody with a skill set, what do you mean when you say that?
Well, we'll take people of all skill sets. So we and of all trades, because we do them all. So most of our volunteers are fairly skilled at carpentry. So they can, you know, they could put in a new door. They can widen a doorway. They can help us install a ramp or fix a deck and those kinds of things. So, and a lot, we have lots and lots of people that go on roofs, and you don't have to have any skills. You just have to be willing to get on a one-story low pitch roof. And that's, we don't put volunteers in anything other than that. So we have volunteers who, again, we take them in all skill levels. The other is that we also need trades folks. So we have everybody in our staff can do a little bit of plumbing, but if it's more complex, we have to contract that out or find a volunteer who has that. Same for electrical. Again, we can do some of our own electrical work, but if it gets, you know, more complicated, you know, we're not licensed electricians, we're not licensed plumbers, so we'll need someone who has a license. And then like HVAC systems, we don't do those ourselves, but if there's an HVAC contractor or a technician who would like to work with us, that's a big hole for us, because we do a lot of work with heating systems. I brought our annual report, and last year we replaced or repaired 27 heating systems. So we had to contract all of that out. But if there was an HVAC tech who said, I want to raise my hand, I want to link up with Good Neighbors, they should absolutely contact us at goodneighborshomerepair.org.
So I have a number of contractor friends, general contractor friends. And so, you know, if they're, you know, or anybody else, you know, who's listening, if they said, hey, look, I got a weekend a month, you know, I've got a day a month that, you know, that I could bring my crew over and that'd we could perfect. Do something.
We have lots of jobs.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, they could be on a list and
yes,
they could call, you could call yeah. them and based upon their schedule, whether they're working or not working, they
absolutely
would fit in perfect.
Yeah. Any day of the week, except for Sundays, we're always out there, out in the field. And so again, we're in New Castle County with probably 100 projects this year. Chester County, 100. Lancaster County, another 20 or so. So there's always, and I mentioned that we always have a backlog of 80 to 90 approved projects to do. And so we're only limited by our ability to get to them and to do quality work. So we're very concerned about doing it a very high quality way. We don't want it to look like it's a freebie. We want it to look like it's professionally done.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Nick, you have any thoughts?
No, I think You've come a long way since the days when I worked with the Jay in the early days of Good Neighbors.
God is good.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I would just say, and the other thing that we have, the I would just say, we're financially, again, we're limited by our financial resource, our people resources. I mean, again, there's more demand for our services than we have resources to do them. So you know, as people, especially this time of year, if they think about, you know, making an end of the year gift or beginning of the year gift, depending on whenever this airs, we can always use the financial resources of folks that believe in our mission and they want to make a donation. So thank you for letting me say that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And if there's a website that somebody wants to reach out to you, what would that be?
GoodNeighborsHomeRepair.org.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, Harold, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It was great to have you. Good to see you, Nick.
Yeah. Great to have you here. And for those of you who are listening, you know, I think there's a couple things I want you to think about. You know, first is where Good Neighbors came from. You know, one person with a passion to help others saw a need in a different place, in a different community, and then started looking around his own neighborhood and said, are there people here that I might be able to help? And it started small. It didn't have to start huge. It started small with a sense of commitment and a sense of passion. And over the years, it's grown into something where just hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of families have been helped. And I think so many times we look at the world and we think, well, how am I going to leave my mark? What am I going to do that's going to have an impact? And we look at something and we go, yeah, but that's not really significant. I want to do something bigger. I want to do something different. And just if you see a need, meet it, step into it. Mm-hmm. And as you step into it, you're just allowing the Spirit to work. And who knows where it's going to go? You might never see the end result. What the bigger pictures, what the bigger picture is going to be. And if you're listening and you're wondering, you know, where can I give a little bit of time is going to have a lasting impact on people's lives? Just Good Neighbors is a really great place to consider. On every job site, there needs to be people who are walking around carrying materials from one place to the next. And if you can swing a hammer, if you can use a saw, hanging out with people who know better and, you know, who are tradesmen and are willing to help you learn more, it would be a great place to hang out and to be and to learn a whole other set of skills while at the same time, helping people in need. So let me just leave you with those two thoughts. And until next time, may you just be abundantly aware of the Spirit alive and well and at work in your world.